Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
On the line with us is our old friend Bill Press. He's got a podcast out there, the Bill Press Pod. You can find wherever you get fine podcasts. Just click on subscribe. He also writes a weekly column for thehill.com. He's the author of 10 books, most recently Trump Must Go. His website, BillPressPods.com. You can tweet him at BillPressPod. Hey, Bill, welcome back.
Hey, Tom, how about it? Good to talk to you. It's been too long.
You have been inside Washington, D.C. politics for quite a while. You know so many of the movers and shakers, so much better than I do, from the politicians to the peripheral players. You live in Washington, D.C. You know that scene. You're constantly interviewing these people. I'm curious your thoughts, first of all, if we can talk about the Democratic Party for a minute. Number one, do you think that there's any possibility of a brokered convention? There was some speculation that if New York actually did succeed in not holding its Democratic primary and a couple of other states followed suit, that Joe Biden might show up at the convention without enough delegates for a slam dunk, which would mean a brokered convention. I don't know if, you know, how the thinking on that is going, number one. And number two, I'm curious your thoughts in general on the Biden candidate.
Well, number one, the question is, what convention, right?
Well, it's going to be done virtually, don't you think?
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. I think the chances of actually everybody getting together the old-fashioned way, crammed, 10,000, 12,000 people crammed on the floor of the convention, it just is not going to happen. There's no way, Right. Even if, miraculously, this coronavirus disappeared tomorrow, people are just not going to be comfortable with a big crowd like that. So I think we're going to have a virtual convention, number one. Number two, I think unless Joe Biden were to really screw up royally, right? I mean, stumble so badly, everybody would say, we can't have this, which I don't believe he's going to do. Joe Biden's going to be the nominee of the party. It's done, particularly, I mean, I know some progressives, and I consider myself and you proud progressives, right? Some progressives just don't want to accept that yet. I understand it. It looked like Bernie, our friend, was going to be the nominee for a long while. Then his kind of car ran out of gas. It's Joe Biden. Biden's got the endorsement of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which doesn't leave much room for any other progressive. And I think those who are not yet supporting, I mean, haven't openly supported Biden at any rate, they're trying to get as much out of Biden, progressives now, as they can on policy matters. And he's moved to the left on some good stuff and on a choice of a vice presidential nominee as well.
In regard to that, I just saw where Elizabeth Warren, in response to Tara Reid's allegations against Biden, just came out and said, and I'm quoting Elizabeth Warren, "The vice president's answers were credible and convincing. I support the vice president, I support his campaign, and I am proud to endorse him for president." That's Elizabeth Warren. How would you rank? I can tell you who my preferred choices for VP would be. Number one would be Elizabeth Warren. Number two would be Kamala Harris. Number three would be Stacey Abrams. You know, and I'm not sure who would be number four. I'm curious your thoughts on who you think would be ideal and who you think most likely is going to end up the VP. I've even heard they were floating Susan Rice.
Yes, and I heard somebody say Debbie Wasserman Schultz from Florida. I mean, come on. She was thrown out, tossed out as Democratic chair, right? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's not
going to
happen.
First of all, I agree with you. My first choice, Elizabeth Warren. I think she's great on the issues. She knows how to get things done, and she's a phenomenal campaigner. I mean, she was really good, I thought.
That was my number one reason. She was pulling crowds of 20,000 people. Nobody else was doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I like the other. I like Kamala a lot. I like, I'll tell you who I like, even though she's not as far left as I would like, is Amy Klobuchar, mainly because where she comes from, right? I like that Midwest, Minnesota. And she's a good person. I've got to know her pretty well. She's got a great sense of humor. I'm not as crazy as you are about Stacey Abrams, only because the chances are, let's give Joe Biden 8 good years, right? But the chances are he may not finish his term, right, given his age.
Right.
And I think the ability, the person, people can see without any doubt, oh, yeah, if something happened, she could step up there and be president of the United States. I have a hard time crossing that bridge for Stacey Abrams, given that she's a state senator from Georgia and a failed Senate candidate, given she
she's never run a national campaign.
Never run a national campaign.
She's not been vetted in a national campaign, and that's scary. That's Tom Eagleton kind of stuff, or has the potential for it. Excuse me.
You know, the other thing, Tom, is the other thing, Tom. I think we got to is one thing I always think about this is people. I don't think are giving Joe Biden enough credit for saying flat out, "I'm going to have a woman as my vice presidential nominee." I mean, that was a pretty bold move. You know, exactly. A BFT to use his phrase. So
to use a Bidenism, yes. We're talking with Bill Press. His Bill Press pod is climbing the charts, and you be sure to check it out wherever you get your podcast. Just search for the Bill Press pod, and you can subscribe to it very easily. It's free. It comes out twice a week. Some great interviews there. Bill, we're watching Donald Trump try to shift away from the coronavirus. He wants to, you know, on Tuesday it was reported he was going to disband the, you know,
his
panel. But now it looks like he's just going to neuter them. He was getting criticism for disbanding them. But, you know, the effect will be the same. He wants to have a conversation about the economy rather than a conversation about the illness that he has allowed to be unleashed on this country. How do you think that's going to work for him?
I think it's going to backfire big time. Absolutely. First of all, it's just, to me, outrageous. This is a guy who will be remembered as being both, when it comes to coronavirus, too late and too early, right? Or too late and too soon, if you will. I mean, he was too late taking it seriously. We lost 2 months when he was dismissing it, saying it was 5 cases, it was going to go down to 1 case. April is going to disappear in April, you know, all the stuff. Anybody who criticized him, that was their latest hoax, blah, blah, blah. So,
well, it might have been 4 months, Bill. I mean, you know, Israel is reporting that in November, U.S. intelligence told them this was coming.
That's right. Could be 4, could be 3, could be at least 2 months, right? Before he even took it seriously. And now it's hardly over. It hasn't even crested, right? I just checked before we came on. We're now at 1.2 million cases. 72,500 deaths, 20,000 new cases a day, 1,500 people dying a day. And Donald Trump says, basically, okay, states, open up. We got it behind us. Turn the corner. We're going to put the task force on the back burner. So he got in too late. He's getting out too early. The health professionals say, I'm sure you've been talking about this, 135,000 cases by August. So here we are at 72,000 a day.
Deaths,
Another 75,000 are going to die, and people are saying, so what? That's what Donald Trump is saying. So what? I mean, Jesus, what have we come to?
I think this
election, Tom, is going to be a referendum on Donald Trump's handling of the coronavirus.
I think you're right. And his handling of the economy as a consequence of the coronavirus, because it could have been done so much better. I mean, you got Northern European countries that are still looking at 5% unemployment because they simply kept everybody, you know, the government paid the payrolls. And that was that, you know, it was an easy way to do it. Bill Press, his new podcast, The Bill Press Pod, his website, BillPressPods.com. Bill, thanks a lot for dropping by. Great talking to you.
Hey, Tom, great to join you again. All right. Be good. Be safe.
Thank you, Bill. Yeah, you too. Our old friend Bill Press, what great work this guy does. Joe Walsh, the Republican former member of Congress, is writing to Justin Amash, of course, the Republican from Michigan, who was literally the only Republican member of the House of Representatives calling for the impeachment of Donald Trump based on the Mueller report. And he got a lot of props for that, and he got a lot of respect for that. But Justin Amash is thinking about running for president on a Libertarian ticket. And the concern in a lot of circles is that there are a lot of Republicans who will probably vote for Joe Biden just because they're so disgusted by Donald Trump, and they want to go vote because they want to vote for their governor and for their senator and for their, you know, local sheriff or whatever it may be. They're going to go vote. They would vote for Joe Biden. But if there is another conservative on the ticket, specifically Justin Amash on the Libertarian ticket, you know, one who they take seriously, one who has a national profile, not, you know, some joker, right? You know, not somebody nobody ever heard of, or somebody who's like Bill Weld, the former governor of Massachusetts. He's just like, he's so obscure now, you know, and he's so 20 years ago. Nobody's taking that seriously. So it could throw the election to Donald Trump. And there's a real concern about this, that he might siphon off those votes. Joe Walsh, a former Republican member of the Congress, of the House of Representatives, former founding member of the Freedom Caucus, the Tea Party Caucus, writes, "I pledge to vote for anyone the Democrats nominated, even Bernie Sanders, whose policies I hate. The issue is whether Trump gets a second term. And the best way to, and surest way to beat Trump is to have only one alternative to him." Amen. Spot on. Meanwhile, New York has canceled the Democratic primary for president. And this has got a whole bunch of people very, very upset. Andrew Yang has filed a lawsuit. This was yesterday afternoon. Filed a lawsuit saying that this was a blow to democracy. He says it is reasonable to take precautions to allow for safe voting, but such decisions cannot arbitrarily pertain to some elections and not others. But there's a second dimension to this that's absolutely fascinating. This is from the Catholic News Agency. And of course, their issue is abortion and Catholic issues. But it was at the top of Drudge. It's being widely distributed, this article and the meme that goes along with it. And it's that Joe Biden so far has 1,305 delegates pledged to him. He needs 1,991 to get the nomination. So while everybody, you know, yesterday Hillary Clinton endorsed him, while everybody has basically said, yes, we're on with Joe Biden, and I, you know, if Joe Biden is our party's nominee, I'll do everything I can to help him get elected. I think at the core, he's a fundamentally decent man. You know, I disagree with some of his political policies over the past, but I'm also watching him move in a more progressive direction very rapidly. And all those things are good things. But the point that they're making is that, well, I'll just read to you from this. It said, if New York's decision triggers other states to cancel their own primaries, it's entirely possible that Biden could arrive at the Democratic convention without a guarantee of the nomination. Assuming the convention begins without a majority of delegates pledged to Biden, the nomination process, during which delegates conduct floor votes, would become a live fire exercise rather than a pro forma step in Biden's coronation as nominee. And if Biden doesn't secure the majority on the first ballot, delegates could offer another candidate from the floor. And then the Catholic newspaper here goes into the whole thing about Tara Reid, and basically they start pitching Andrew Cuomo. You know, he's on TV every day. He looks like the most likely to benefit. Now, I'm very much not a fan of Andrew Cuomo because of his politics, because of the positions he's taken. He's another Catholic politician. So, you know, they write many would see him as a more obvious match for Donald Trump in a televised head to head. I'm not expecting this to happen. In fact, I'd be frankly very surprised if it happens. But if enough states cancel the Democratic primary, it's remotely possible. I hope not. Frankly, I hope that, you know, that everybody can coalesce behind one person as quickly as possible. And I think that if Joe Biden wants to head this off, the most effective way to do that would be to name his vice presidential candidate as soon as possible and get that person out there campaigning. Because love him or hate him, Biden, if he's going to be the Democratic nominee, we've got to get behind him. We've got to make this thing happen. And he's not a particularly effective campaigner, at least so far. I would like to see him become a more effective campaigner. But, you know, lacking that, let's get a good vice presidential candidate in there who can get out and, you know, take names and kick ass. Two top candidates in my mind are Stacey Abrams and Elizabeth Warren. But, you know, there's others and we'll see who he gets. But expect to hear more about this over the next week or two, because, as I said, this was, you know, Drudge was promoting this very heavily today. It's going to go wide and broad in right-wing media, and it's probably going to be all over Fox News and right-wing hate media, and they're going to position it as a way of knocking Biden. I'm trying to position it as a way of, you know, hey, Joe, get your act together here, make this thing happen, get your vice presidential nominee, and let's move forward. Because, you know, I think that a brokered convention or a fight in the convention, I mean, first of all, the convention's a few months down the road, and we need to be building momentum now. And secondly, that's generally speaking not considered a good thing. There's, you know, some of the conventional wisdom is that when Jimmy Carter in 1980 was challenged by Ted Kennedy, that challenge by Kennedy was the thing that caused Carter to lose the election to Ronald Reagan. Now, in fact, the main thing that caused Carter to lose the election was that Reagan cut a deal with the Iranians to hold the hostages until after the election. In fact, they released the hostages literally to the minute when Reagan put his hand on the Bible, and Reagan's people had already been shipping weapons to Iran at that point. Interesting stuff. I just put it out for your consideration.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Daryl in Washington, D.C. Hey, Daryl, what's up?
I wanted to know why you thought that Democrats didn't push more forcefully on requiring vote by mail and election security in any of these bills. And I understand that, you know, don't want to play politics or whatever, but shoring up our election and having them steal a third election, as you know, could not be any more serious. So I don't understand why they didn't play hardball there.
I don't have a clear and easy answer for you, Daryl, sadly. The problem has always been, the problem for the last 40 years has been that the Republicans are interested in accumulating power, period, full stop. And the Democrats are interested in governing the nation and doing what's best for the people. And so the Democrats were like, oh, my God, there's a crisis. Let's solve the crisis. And the Republicans are like, you know, we need to get money to our buddies. I wish the Democratic Party would be more aggressive. I wish the Democratic elected officials would be more aggressive. I know there's been a number of them who have been very outspoken on these issues, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and others. But that's the problem, Daryl, as far as I know, is basically weak Democratic leadership.
I was wondering your thoughts on the VP. I'm not ruling out Michelle. I know she said she wouldn't do it, but with democracy on the line, I wouldn't rule that out completely. I like Harris a lot, and I know Warren would bring in the Bernie contingency, but I wanted to know your thoughts.
In my opinion, probably the best candidate that Joe Biden could pick would be Elizabeth Warren. I love Stacey Abrams. She's never been in a national election, and that gives me pause. But, you know, she's aggressively campaigning for the job, and if she gets it, I think she'll do spectacularly. I would love to see her as VP. Kamala Harris, good candidate. She's not as progressive as Warren or Abrams. Those two are the genuine progressive women out there. Amy Klobuchar would be just another Tim Kaine, in my opinion. I'm also thinking that given the stuff that's coming out, Tara Reid's stuff, the fact that Joe Biden has not really been doing a good job of communicating, frankly, I don't think it's possible for the Democratic Party to come up with a Plan B candidate, but he has not yet been given the nomination. I think there needs to be more conversation about that. Who's going to be our party's nominee? I doubt it's going to happen, and I doubt that my voice has any influence over it, but I'm very concerned. Donna in Atlanta. Hey, Donna, what's on your mind today?
Basically, should there be an African-American person, a woman, on Joe Biden's ticket to vice president? And The issue that I wanted to bring up is the issue of colorism, not racism, but colorism. Personally, I think that Stacey Abrams, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, I would be honored to have either one of those women on the ticket because I think they're all wonderful. However, my concern is once a Democrat wins, assuming Joe Biden, for president for 2020, I think that it would be prudent probably for him to serve 4 years. I don't know. He may serve 8. But nevertheless, I think we have to be prepared to have multiple Democratic administrations unless we will find ourselves where we are now with a Republican coming behind and nullifying the progress that has been made. And so for that reason, I think it's very important that we consider different things about who is going to be his vice president. The thing about Stacey Abrams is, in America, there is a such thing as colorism. Well, the thing is, Stacey Abrams is a dark woman. She's not a small woman. She's a large woman. She's a woman with natural hair. She's going to fit more into the mindset that people have a mindset of her in the role of a mammy. They won't see her in the role of a leader. And I'm afraid that that's what is going to impact a lot of people, even though it might be subconscious, when it comes to Stacey Abrams and putting her on that ticket. So I just wanted to put that out. I think colorism is very real in America.
So that colorism being the darker a person's skin, the more they're viewed in a negative light, I guess would be a way to say it.
That's it, yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is a real tough one because, you know, I remember back in 2008, one of the number two guys in the Democratic Party in California on this program, he's African-American, and he said, don't vote for Obama because America will never elect a black man. But we got
one. You're listening to Tom
Hartman. Anyhow, Don, I got to run.
Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Boy, what a complex situation. We'll be back. I'll pick up more of your phone calls in just a minute. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Anthony in Detroit. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, Tom? In terms of who the VP should be, in my opinion, I think Nina Turner would be a good pick to really get the unity with the ultra-progressive, hardcore people, you know, the snake emoji type people.
Yeah.
Especially
I love Nina Turner, Anthony. My concern with her is the same as my concern with Stacey Abrams, which is neither of them have ever run a national campaign where they were in the spotlight and they had millions of dollars of opposition research focused on them in a way that would pop out anything like, you know, Elizabeth Warren once saying that she had a Native American relative on a form at Harvard. That kind of stuff, you know, doesn't come out until you're in a national campaign. I really think that we can't afford to have a Tom Eagleton moment. That's, you know, Tom Eagleton was the guy that George McGovern picked as his VP. And then once that incredible intense glare was on him, I mean, he was on the ticket. Right. He had been nominated at the convention and accepted. And then as they focused that glare on him and they started digging through his old medical records, they discovered that he'd once been treated for depression and had electroshock therapy. And this was right around the time the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest came out. And that was it. Eagleton had to be replaced. And I don't even remember who they replaced him with now. But it was a disaster for the McGovern campaign. And I think one of the main reasons that McGovern lost so badly in that election, that's the 1972 election to Richard Nixon. And so that's my only concern. I love Nina Turner. Louise and I know her personally. We've had dinner with her and her husband. They're wonderful people. She is a smart person. She was a state senator in Ohio and a brilliant one. She held a leadership post. I would walk over broken glass for Nina Turner. But I really think that we need to have a candidate who has been vetted, you know, under the glare of a multi-million-dollar effort. And that's why I say in my order of progression would be Warren, Harris, and then Abrams is number three. And I think you could toss in Nina Turner. I'd make her number four. But a good start, Anthony. Thank you very much. Amy in San Diego.
I'm really concerned about Trump using this pandemic to postpone our election. Can he declare an emergency because of the pandemic? He's making it worse. So by November, it's really going to be a catastrophe.
Yeah, he's already declared an emergency, but his emergency powers do not include the power to stop the elections. What he and the Republicans could do is they could have, strategically, they could have enough states claim after Election Day happens, the day after the election, claim that there was so much interruption in their election process because of the COVID virus whatever excuse they want to come up with. They can't certify their electoral college vote or their total vote, rather, and therefore they can't certify their electoral college vote, in which case, under the 12th Amendment, this gets thrown to the House of Representatives, where each state has one vote. And that would mean that Trump gets reelected, because there's, I think, 32 states that are controlled by Republicans and only 28 that are controlled by Democrats. I may be off by one or two on those numbers, but it's a majority is controlled by Republicans. So that's my big concern, Amy. And, you know, we'll see if it gets played, how it plays out. But thank you for the call. Great question. And welcome back, William in West Los Angeles. Hey, William, what's up?
My favorite would have been Warren, Sanders, Warren, either way. That said, we've got to go with Harris. I'll tell you why. I mean, in terms of this statement always drives me nuts. Black people are not a monolith. My gosh, Obama's listening to rap music and R&B music in the White House. It's culture. And if we do not get Harris, as much as I adore Warren, I assure you, we lose the black vote, we lose the Supreme Court, we lose our democracy. And the difference with us and the GOP is those guys, they recognize strategy, and so do black people. The GOP knew that this guy was not fit for office. But hey, he's getting $2 billion in free advertising, so, you know, we better go with him. Even Ted Cruz, his family's name, his wife being besearched, this guy, like, grovels up to him. The bottom line is we got to think strategy. We can't fall in love. We got to fall in line. And if we don't get this, we don't get the Biden-Harris ticket, I assure
William, I think that you are massively underestimating how thoughtful and how pragmatic most African-American voters are in the United States.
I'm African-American.
Okay. Forgive me for then lecturing you about it. But, but my understanding is that the African-American community, broadly speaking, again, it's not a monolith, as you said, tends to be more pragmatic on these things and is, you know, knows that Donald Trump is a threat.
Why would they
not vote for Elizabeth Warren?
As much as Warren supports our agenda, she basically is unknown. And literally, I mean, we're cultural. We vote. We're almost, I mean, it's the same difference as Friday night Orthodox Jews. I mean, we literally, I mean, I'm with some of my white friends or other racial friends, and we're walking. They're like, hey, how come every time you walk past a black guy, you know, or a black woman you don't know, and you guys always speak to each other? Because it's cultural. We have nothing else to go on. That's why the entertainment business has been so strong, is because we support our own. We're the only group that make music and entertainment for ourselves, and every other culture comes in. You know, oh, that's cool. I mean, I don't go buy mariachi music. We support what we do. We do our own, and we support our own. And I assure you, we don't have. That's why Obama won. That's why Hillary lost, because she knew she had our vote in the bag. And that's black people that knew who she were. We knew that she was like Obama's pick. Bottom line, it's a matter of culture. And I assure you, if Harris is not on that ticket, I said this in 16, I'll say it again right now, 2020, this is desperate. We lose the black vote, lose the Supreme Court, we lose our democracy. We have to have a black female, and it has to be Harris. I agree with what you said earlier about Stacey, about Nina. I agree, 100%. Harris fits the bill. Yeah.
Well, you know, Harris is on my list right below Elizabeth Warren. I just look at the kind of crowds they both drew. Harris was drawing hundreds of people. Warren was drawing tens of thousands, although they were largely white crowds. That
black.
Would be the caveat I'd put on that.
They were black, yeah. Bob. They weren't black.
Yeah.
Thank you for your time.
So, William, thank you. Thank you. I'll ponder this. I value your perspective.
Tom.
Thank you. Yeah. Good talking to you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Sherry in Shelton, Washington. Hey, Sherry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. As everyone else, I admire you so much, and thank you for everything you do.
Thank you. It's not necessary.
I know. I was thinking about the VP thing for a long time, and it did occur to me that there. I understand why people want a woman of color, but I also, it occurred to me, that could ignite this tinderbox that the right is, I mean, they're just like ready to explode. And do you think that would push them over the edge? You know, they want,
yeah, but,
they want some,
you know,
controversy. But Elizabeth Warren would pull in all the progressives and not stir up the right as much, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the, of course, even having a woman is going to make the hard right, you know, these crazies who show up, You know, their whole anti-abortion shtick is really a keep women in their place shtick. And, you know, they're going to go nuts if it's a woman, just like they went nuts on Hillary Clinton. That's a given. If it's a black woman, then you add race to that, they're going to go even more nuts. But there's an old saying, you know, it uses a different word, but basically screw them if they can't take a joke. I'm not so concerned about that fringe, that 1 or 2% fringe that are always on the media, you know, out there with their guns and their Nazi flags and stuff. I'm more concerned about the casual, just casual racism that is held by so many white people in the United States. Although that's no reason not to put a black candidate on the ticket. Barack Obama was not only elected president, he was reelected. So, you know, I'd say that probably the more important thing is the quality of the candidate. And, you know, Kamala Harris is, you know, a high quality person in many regards, but she does have some problems with law and order stuff in her background. I'm making my decision, and it's not even a decision. I'm not endorsing Joe Biden, and I'm not endorsing Elizabeth Warren for VP. I think she's the one who could bring in the you know, Bernie's got about a third of the Democratic electorate. And, you know, that's an important thing. And I think that, well, my opinion about how African-Americans are going to vote, I probably shouldn't express. I should let African-Americans call in and express their opinion on that. So I'll toss that as a question for later on in the week. You know, especially if you're African-American, who do you think should be the VP? Sherry,
do you think
ahead.
Part of the equation, too, is who we should consider is going to be replaced by someone else? Like, who's going to replace Elizabeth Warren if she gets in, and who's going to replace Kamala Harris when she gets in? That's something that
Elizabeth Warren would be replaced by a Republican, because as a Republican governor in Massachusetts and will be for another 2.5 years. But they do have a special election law in Massachusetts. So there's 100 and some odd days. I'm sorry, I don't know the number off the top of my head, in which time she can be replaced. There are ways to shorten substantially that period of time. And so, and that another reason why Biden needs to make his decision quickly, because he's doing from everything I can see, a terrible job of campaigning, and he needs to get somebody in there who can you know, pick up some media for him. And frankly, I think Warren can do that. I mean, she's also the only candidate. You know, when Kamala Harris was out campaigning, she was pulling hundreds of people and maybe occasionally thousands of people. Elizabeth Warren was routinely pulling 20,000 people at a time. I mean, huge, huge crowds. You want some excitement. Joe Biden was not pulling those kind of crowds. We've got to have some excitement on the ticket. What a day, huh? Steve in Topanga, California. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind today? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hey, Tom. I was thinking that progressives need to put their own Powell memo together on hyperspeed. And then I think Biden should do something like that, put some proposals out there, and we need long-term education. Read your hidden history books, and I really got a lot out of them, and now I'm on the crash of 2016. And I think that's the only way we're going to get anywhere is through re-educating the population, because I was educated in the 60s pretty much, and I don't think the schools we're not learning critical thinking anymore.
I think you're absolutely right, Steve, and that's what I'm trying to do with this program. And I believe that, you know, other progressives, you know, Randy Rhodes and Stephanie Miller and Mike Malloy and all the others out there are trying to do as well. And the problem is that the corporate media is trying to go down the middle, in quotes, and the middle has shifted so far to the right that going down the middle means, you know, being like, I guess, Richard Nixon. So it's a tough one. But I'm with you.
Last thing I want to say is I think that you could write something like the Powell memo for the progressives. I think that would be in good hands if you took that on.
Well, I was going to say my book, Cracking the Code, is that. But actually, I think Rebooting the American Dream is that. I wrote a book that's got 11 chapters, and each one is a specific policy prescription. You know, one on free education, one on health care, one on dealing with trade. In fact, it opens with dealing with trade. That's the first chapter, you know, ending so-called free trade. So I've already written. In fact, Bernie wrote a cover letter saying, you got to read this book. And gave a copy of it to all 99 other senators when that book came out. It came out about 6 years ago, but it's still in print. And it's called Rebooting the American Dream. And it's my version of the Powell memo. Thanks a lot for the call, Steve. Horace in High Point, North Carolina. Hey, Horace, what's on your mind?
How you doing, Tom? I have a ticket that the Democrats should run, and it's impossible to beat. Biden should pick Michelle Obama. Once he's inaugurated, he resigns. That makes Michelle the president. Then she can pick whoever she wants for vice president that'll put Obama back in the White House again for 8 years. Without question, they could never beat that ticket.
Yeah, probably not, but don't discount the power of white racism. And with Michelle Obama, you've got a twofer. You'd have, you know, white men who don't think women should be in politics as well. But I think that, you know, I love Michelle Obama, and I think that the problem is she has never been an elected official before. And I don't think she has any interest in doing this.
Two things I understand is humility and good common sense. The lady has both.
She has both.
She is an excellent speaker, and there is no way that the Republicans could ever beat that ticket. No way.
Yeah. Okay. Boris, thank you. I've actually seen speculation to that effect on message boards, you know, in the last couple of weeks. There's also speculation now that that Biden might pick Susan Rice, which is interesting. Anyhow, we'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Today's book in our book club is The Hidden History of the War on Voting, Who Stole Your Vote and How to Get It Back, by this guy, Tom Hartman. This is from chapter one, or from the introduction, actually. In 2016, 6% of Americans who were eligible to vote nominated Donald Trump as the GOP's presidential candidate. It was 8% for Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. Trump went on to be elected president by 26% of eligible voters. The modern American oligarchs have largely stayed in power using three simple elements: explicit overt racism, massive disinformation campaigns, and voter suppression. No ideas, no push for better schools, hospitals, airports, roads, or bridges, or reform of our health, energy, or financial systems. No promise of more and better jobs. None of these staples of past presidential campaigns can be found in pretty much any Republican advertising today. Instead, the public Republican message is all about race, or the subset of race, religion. Muslim stands in for brown Arab in GOP speak, and immigration, aka brown people from south of our border, and socialism. Meanwhile, Republican secretaries of state across the nation are vigorously purging voters from the rolls. Over 17 million, more than 10% of America's active voters, in just the 2016-2018 period, according to NBC News. After the five Republican appointees on the U.S. Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013, 14 GOP-controlled states moved within a year, some within days, to restrict access to the vote, particularly for communities of color, students, and retired people. In North Carolina, for example, 158 polling places were permanently closed in the 40 counties with the most African-American voters just before the 2016 election, leading to a 16% decline in African-American early voting in that state. An MIT study found that nationwide, Hispanic voters wait 150% longer in line than white voters, and black voters can expect to wait 200% longer in line to vote. In Indiana, then-Governor Mike Pence's new rigorous voter ID law caused an 11.5% drop in African-American voting. Students are suing for their right to vote, and retired people who no longer drive but care passionately about their Social Security and Medicare are being turned away at the polls by the hundreds of thousands because their driver's licenses have expired. The obvious failure of 40-plus years of Reaganomics and GOP policies to maintain a functional middle class in America has been a problem for the modern GOP. In 1974, for example, the GOP had outright control of only seven states. The message, "Elect us and we'll help the rich people," just didn't generally resonate with American voters. It's the reason why, outside of the fluke elections of 46 and 52, Democrats controlled the House of Representatives outright for three generations, from 1933 to 1996, and controlled the Senate for most of that time. Desperate to win the presidency for the GOP in 1968, Richard Nixon went so far as to commit treason by torpedoing a peace deal with President Lyndon Johnson that President Lyndon Johnson had worked out with the North and South Vietnamese. According to Abul Hassan Bani Sadr, then president of Iran, Ronald Reagan did the same thing by cutting a deal with Iran whereby they would hold on to the U.S. embassy hostages until after the 1980 presidential election, torpedoing Jimmy Carter's chances of re-election. But in 2000, the GOP changed tactics. After Reagan was almost busted for his part in Iran-Contra, he testified that he had forgotten about details of the program more than 80 times. His growing Alzheimer's spared him an indictment. They realized that getting busted for treason wasn't worth the risk. They needed a plan B, and it was deliciously simple. If most voters don't like what you're selling, then just don't let them vote. Paul Weyrich promoted this idea back in 1980 when he was campaigning for Reagan after co-founding the Heritage Foundation. And indeed, many Republican luminaries, such as William Rehnquist, who went from serving the GOP by standing in polling places and intimidating Hispanic and Native American voters in the 1960s to becoming Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, rose up through the ranks by participating in Republican-run voter intimidation schemes. Voter suppression became the foundational go-to tactic for the GOP in 2000. Although the GOP attacked Democratic presidential nominee Al Gore with smear and innuendo, ridiculing him for helping write the legislation that created the modern internet, for example, the main thing that got George W. Bush into the White House was voter suppression. His brother, Florida Governor Jeb Bush, and Bush's Secretary of State, Katherine Harris, threw somewhere between 20,000 and 90,000 African-American voters off the rolls. They were able to get the vote close enough that five Republican appointees to the Supreme Court functionally awarded Bush the presidency. The BBC covered this in 2001 in two major investigative reports that were seen all over the world, except on any American media. By 2016, the Republican Party had fine-tuned its voter suppression and intimidation systems to the point that they ran like well-oiled machines in nearly 30 states. Between the 2012 and 2016 presidential elections, for example, Ohio had purged more than 2 million voters from its rolls, the vast majority, more than 2-1, in heavily African-American and Hispanic counties. The five Republican appointees on the Supreme Court ruled in 2017 that they could keep it up. And other states have since adopted their new tactic of caging voters. The book, The Hidden History of the War on Voting, by me.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. While Donald Trump is saying that we can't allow mail-in voting, you know, it's rife with fraud and it helps Democrats. Well, it does help Democrats because more people vote, and that always helps Democrats. But it doesn't, you know, there is no evidence of fraud associated with mail-in vote. We've been mail-in voting here for over a decade in Oregon, in Washington State, in Utah, in Hawaii, I believe Arizona. No problem, no fraud. But Donald Trump doesn't like it. The Republican Party doesn't like it. But the voters do. It turns out 79% of Democrats want to vote by mail this fall. And 65% of Republicans want to vote by mail this fall. Just, you know, a little FYI for you. According to a new study, Donald Trump, this is fascinating, in election. This is from The Atlantic, a piece by Mark Elias called How to Fix Our Voting Rules Before November. It's from back in, it's from April 5th. A couple days ago. And he says what's slight adjustments in the rules can tilt the game of politics, essentially for or against specific players. He starts out with the sports story, you know, the three-point free throw line, I think it's called, three-point line. Back in 1979, the NBA adopted that. And suddenly there was a shift in which teams had the advantage, because the teams that had the tallest players and the longest reach and the best long shots suddenly had an advantage on the basketball field. He points out that similarly, if your name is listed first on the ballot, you get a 1.7% increase in the vote. And in Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, Trump was listed first on the ballot. And he won by less than 1.7%. Another recent study showed that increasing the number of days of early in-person voting particularly increased turnout among women and voters in their 20s. According to the authors, if every state in 2016 had 23 days of early voting, Hillary Clinton would have easily won Florida, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and the presidency. Now, what they haven't done is determined how vote by mail, you know, how the ability to vote by mail influences that. And frankly, they've got a couple of states, you know, Washington State and Oregon, where we've had vote by mail now for over a decade, that would be easy to examine, you know, the differences before and after and the differences between us and, say, another state with a high level of civic engagement like California. But what the Republicans know, why you saw the Republican-controlled Wisconsin State Supreme Court say, no, we're willing to put our senior citizens at risk of death in order to preserve a Republican majority on the Supreme Court, and why you saw the five right-wingers on the U.S. Supreme Court say essentially the same thing, is because they know that if everybody in the United States were to vote, as Donald Trump said, you'd never see a Republican elected to office again. Now, that, of course, coming out of Trump's mouth is an exaggeration, but you're not going to see another Republican president for a long, long time. Frankly, the majority of people have not voted for a Republican for president since 1988, when they voted for George Herbert Walker Bush. I mean, that was it. That was the last time that a Republican actually won the majority vote in the United States. In Wisconsin, the Democrats, more people voted for Democrats for the state Senate, for the state House, for governor, for everything. More people voted for Democrats in the last election than voted for Republicans. Yet the Republicans in Wisconsin continue to control the House, the Senate, and the Supreme Court because of gerrymandering, because of these radical policies that, you know, the Koch brothers' little puppet, Scott Walker, put into place. So, you know, we have to make as goal one, as job one, as our number one main project, to have vote by mail all across the United States in time for the November election. We've got to make that a top priority. Ironically, by the way, the Wisconsin Supreme Court that said, you know, we're going to force people to go vote today, at the top of their website it says, in an effort to protect the public, attorneys, court staff, and judges from the health risks associated with COVID-19, the Wisconsin courts have issued orders temporarily suspending in-person proceedings statewide with certain limited exceptions. In other words, you can't be in person in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which just requires you to be in person in front of a voting machine.
To the Tom Hartman program.
With these Republicans, it just never ends. Robbie in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Robbie, what's up?
How you doing today, Tom?
I'm alive and kicking, Robbie. Sounds like you are, too.
Staying alive. You know, I've been hearing a lot of people, particularly even in the progressive caboo and all that, when I'm listening to people talk about the primary election, and they keep saying that there's this false notion that Joe Biden overwhelmingly won it. especially with the black vote. But I gave you, you know, the evidence that not only were they adjusting exit polls, but the voter suppression was actually done by the Democratic Party. So it's just troubling for me to even have people say, oh, well, Bernie Sanders didn't win the black vote. I don't see how anybody can take any results that we're listening to seriously.
Well, yeah, except that you really have no choice, Robbie. I mean, you know, this is the system have. And until you become, Robbie, until you become a precinct committee person here in Portland in the Democratic Party, don't throw stones.
Tom, here's the problem, though. Our state literally
the problem
got,
is
like,
people like you are not showing up, Robbie. I get it. You know, there are parts of the Democratic Party that are as corrupt as punky wood. And there are parts of the Democratic Party that are really good. And it's not going to get better until people start participating.
Tom, I actually find that just a little bit, I don't know, I kind of found that disrespectful. I was a part of this in Arizona. I was a part of the Democratic Party, and I watched the establishment do exactly what they did to Bernie Sanders.
But sure. They will continue doing it wherever they can, as long as they can. And as I said, there's parts of the Democratic Party that are very corrupt. I mean, New York State is a great example of it. The New York legislature, they hang out with the Republicans, many of the Democrats there. But that said, the only way that changes is when we don't, you know, okay, you showed up, you were grossed out by what the party was doing in Arizona, and you walked away. That's dumb, Robbie. You don't walk away. You stay in there and you fight and you bring as many friends as you can to that fight and you participate and try to get some power. Actually, instead of just saying, I'm going to show up and watch what's going on, say, I want to become a precinct committee person.
Tom, you know what the definition of doing the same thing and getting the same results is, right?
I'm not suggesting doing the same thing, Robbie. I'm suggesting revolution. This is what Bernie has been talking about all along. He's calling for a political revolution. The revolution he's calling for is inside the Democratic Party. If you're a Bernie supporter, you need to become part of the revolution.
Tom, the Democrats rigged the primary election again, and people are under this false notion that somehow this is just the way it is. That's literally what you just said. That's going to stop any revolutionary
movement. No, that's what you said, Robbie. What I'm saying is, yes, there are places where the Democratic Party and some individual Democrats, in fact, probably, you know, depending on how you define corruption, if you define it as taking a lot of lobbyist money and tossing out legislation that the lobbyists asked for, probably more than half of the Democratic Party, slightly more than half of members of Congress at the federal level. Yes.
So how many
and
more
the only way that's going to change is if we launch a revolution within the Democratic Party. And the only way that happens is when you show up. Now, I realize now you have to show up virtually, but still show up, participate, be part of the solution. Robbie, you know, it's a cliche. It's an old, old cliche, but it's true. You are either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. And sitting around complaining about it on talk radio is being part of the problem. Jane in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jane, what's on your mind today?
I've just been really appalled by the behavior of my fellow Democrats. In their reaction to the Tara Reid allegations, I started out, I read the article in Newsweek, I read the article in New York Times, and it just seemed like there was a significant amount of corroboration for her story. And I'm just kind of wondering what your take is on the whole thing. I mean, it just seems like people are so just eager to poke holes in her story, to listen to anything that might be a minor inconsistency. And I mean, as a woman in her 50s, I mean, a lot of us, you know, lived through that era, were sexually assaulted to one degree or another. I mean, it was not uncommon behavior, sad to say. And I don't remember every detail. I don't remember every year. I don't remember every place. Do you know what I mean? And to sit there and say, well, she can't remember every single detail. We can't find this document. I'm just disgusted and wondering what your thoughts are.
I'll share some data points with you and then ask you what you think, given this information. First of all, she went to Ronan Farrow. And he looked into the story and said, no, I'm not going to do this. Jody Kantor and Megan Tui, the New York Times reporters who won a Pulitzer Prize for taking down Harvey Wasserman, they investigated her story and refused to report on it. Harvey Weinstein. She, in 2009, wrote a number of things praising Joe Biden for his work on the Violence Against Women Act. The Time's Up Legal Defense Fund referred her to multiple attorneys at the National Women's Law Center. The National Women's Law Center looked into what she was saying, and they declined to work with her because they said, quote, she was requesting PR assistance rather than legal representation. Her former employer says that, by the way, who is a person that she, well, in fact, let me back up. These are the people that she has in public or in court on various occasions in the past accused of sexual assault. Her father, her ex-husband, her former employer, Crystal Rojas, who has released documents showing that she was embezzling from the company, Tara Reid was, a YAWCA supervisor, her former business partner, Frankie Knight, and now Joe Biden. And by the way, her allegations against Joe Biden didn't come out until the day after Joe Biden announced that he was definitely running for president. Initially, she said that Biden had made her uncomfortable by touching her shoulders. She then changed that claim, saying that he had complimented her legs. And then she upped the ante immediately after Biden was named the Democratic nominee, you know, with he attacked me with his fingers thing. And in 2018, she was writing multiple gushing posts praising Vladimir Putin, some that were reprinted in Russian. And, you know, I look at all that stuff and I watched Joe Biden this morning on Morning Joe say this never happened, period, full stop. And I'm frankly more inclined to believe Biden than Reid at this point, but I'm keeping an open mind, you know, assuming that there will be people doing a deeper dive into this than has been done so far.
Well, I was already familiar with the vast majority of
what you said. And she's going to be on Fox News this weekend, by the way.
Right, yes. And I know Fox News has definitely picked up on the story quite a bit. I'm familiar with that, and I'm not a fan of Fox. I was familiar with a lot of that. I did see a really interesting interview today on Democracy Now! With Rich McHugh, former NBC producer. And he basically said, you know, we're never going to really know for sure. But I guess my concern, honestly, is just more at the attitude of Democrats and just saying and just being so eager to poke holes in her story and just to glom on to anything that makes it seem like she's less than.
Well, I'm not trying to circle the wagons here around Joe Biden. If there was any evidence of this, I would be frankly very happy if Joe Biden dropped out and was replaced by Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, who would be the two leading candidates I would think to replace him.
Amen.
Because they align with my politics more than he does. But, you know, that said, and Biden made this point this morning on television, that, you know, when women come forward with accusations, they should be a believed, and the accusation should be investigated. And then you determine whether there's evidence that supports them or evidence that suggests that there's something going on here beyond just, you know, an honest person making an honest accusation. And in this case, I'm concerned that's the way it's going. But like I said, let's keep an open mind for another week or two. I'm sure that there's a lot of journalists who are digging into this very aggressively, not just into Tara Reid, but into Joe Biden. And I think Biden also shot himself in the foot when Mika Brzezinski, you know, he said that all of the personnel records from when he was in the Senate are in the National Archives, which is true. And he asked the National Archives to pull out all of the personnel records from all the years he was in the Senate and see if anybody ever accused him of sexual assault, and specifically pull out all the stuff that has to do with Tara Reid. So, you know, presumably that's going forward. But then Mika said, your papers from your time in the Senate and in the White House as vice president, those papers are in a basement at the University of Delaware, and they will be released after you're no longer in public office. And he made the point that among those papers are things like transcripts of private conversations with world leaders that really should not be released. And certainly all the position papers and all the work that they did over the years, pro and con on all kinds of issues, he said, you know, this stuff could be cherry-picked and used against me in the election. And he wasn't talking about Tara Reid. He was talking, you know, maybe it was the Anita Hill stuff.
No, that makes
sense. God only knows, right? But he was saying, but what he didn't say, and I kept waiting for him to say it, was this, because Mika was like, well, can't they just do a keyword search of it for Tara Reid? And it's almost certainly not in a digital form. What I read was that there were 14 filing cabinets full of this stuff. You know, so it's a massive amount of paper, and it would take probably months to go through and look for anything relating to her. And he was like, there's no there, number one, and number two, that's confidential stuff that nobody should be going through right now, not until I'm out of public office. And, you know, I get what he's saying, but I think what he should have said, you know, just looking at this from publicity point of view, What he should have said is, yeah, I think the University of Delaware should designate a person who's nonpartisan and who, you know, who's not political and who's a good researcher and have them go through that material looking for anything that has to do with Tara Reid. They won't find anything there, but they should have them do that. And instead, he said he wouldn't authorize that. I'm guessing he's going to change his tune on that, because that's going to be the thing that they're going to be beating him up with over on Fox News, is he won't release his papers. And it's going to become the new Hillary email thing, in my opinion.
Right.
So anyhow, that's my 30,000 foot view here, Jane.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I do still find her story credible, just so you know, but I appreciate your viewpoint.
Yeah, thank you, Jane.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Good talking to you. Did you know that Ronald Reagan committed treason to become president in 1980, and George Herbert Walker Bush was in on it, and he avoided being prosecuted for this in 1992 with a little help from Bill Barr? It's on page 116 of my book, The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. So there's a new poll out. I was just talking with Zach from Hollywood about this. This new poll from Data for Progress. They commissioned a nationwide poll. And what they found was that, and the question was, which of the following Democrats would you like to see selected as Joe Biden's vice presidential candidate? And it was Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, Stacey Abrams, Amy Klobuchar, and Christy Todd Whitman were the five women that they put forward, because you know, Biden has said he's going to pick a woman. And this is really interesting. The top line, this is the aggregate vote. Whitman got 3% of the vote. Klobuchar got, and Abrams both got 10%. Harris, Kamala Harris, got 18%. Elizabeth Warren got 31%. And this is the under women. Warren is number one as the pick for VP, 31. The next highest is Harris at 17. Under men, Warren is the highest at 30. The next highest is Harris at 21. And I'm starting to wonder if these are percentages or if these are votes. I don't know. But in any case, under men, Warren is it wins. Under people under 45, it was 32 Warren, 19 to Harris, and then 8 and 4 for Abrams, Klobuchar, and Whitman. For among people who were black people, it was 22 African Americans, 22% for Warren, 22% for Harris, 17% for Abrams, 11% for Klobuchar, 4% for Whitman. Among white people, it was 34 for Warren, 17 for Harris, 8 for Abrams, 11 for Klobuchar. Among Sanders supporters, it was 39 for Warren, 17 for Harris, 8 for Abrams, 10 for Klobuchar, 3 for Whitman. And among Biden supporters, and this is, you know, a really important group to look at, people who just, you know, are in love with Joe Biden, Whitman got 4%, Klobuchar got 11, or maybe it's votes, Klobuchar got 11, Abrams got 10, Harris got 22, but Warren, Elizabeth Warren, got 30. So Elizabeth Warren literally won every single category, female, male, under 45, black, white, Sanders, and Biden supporters. And, you know, so I put that out there for your consideration. All righty. Let's see here. Liz in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Liz, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. In Mesa, I have been writing letters to voters that do not register by mail. I target, have a list of Democrats, and I send them a form. I have learned the hard way that it's not realistic to ask a voter to go online and download a form. So I mail them this form so they can mail it to their election board to vote by mail. So in that way, I can reach out to people. It then shows Democrats are helpful and we really care about you. You really matter to us.
That's marvelous, Liz. That is absolutely marvelous. Where are you getting your list of potential voters? Is this among friends and family who you know are not registered to vote?
Oh, no. I'm very involved in my local Democratic Party.
Oh, so they're giving you a list.
I would be canvassing these voters. I would be going to their houses and asking them to vote by mail, but I can't. And this is, if you vote by mail, you have 70% voter turnout. So your local Democratic Party is very helpful.
Yeah, there you go. Liz, good on you. I tip my hat to you. Thank you so much for the call and for the story. Carl in Mount Vernon, Washington. Carl, we got about a half a minute. You got a quick one here?
Washington, of course, has the mail-in ballots anyway, but for the 10, 15 years before that, I always ordered an absentee ballot because I would get questions or things on the ballot that I wasn't prepared for, and that way I could look them up instead of just being lost in the in the blue there. So.
Yeah, the judge races, the ballot initiatives. You're absolutely right, Carl. That's a great point. There is a huge benefit to voting by mail, whether it's called an absentee ballot or a vote by mail ballot, and that is that you get to do your research, you get to think things through. You're not just jammed into a booth. Anyhow, thanks so much for being with us today. We will be back tomorrow, same bat time, same bat place. And in the meantime, there is a lot that needs to be done. And tag your it. Tell your friends how to find Progressive Media, too.
We'll see. You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.